Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anne Marie Macari. Anne Marie Macari's new book, She Heads Into the Wilderness, was published by Autumn House Press in 2008. She is the author of two previous books, Gloryland by Alice James in 2005 and Ivory Cradle, which won the APR Honickman First Book Prize in 2000, chosen by Robert Creeley. Macari was the recipient of the James Dickey Prize for Poetry from Five Points magazine, and her poems have appeared in numerous journals such as the Iowa Review, the American Poetry Review, Tri-Quarterly, Field, and others. Macari is the director of the Drew University Low Residency MFA program. She lives in Lambertville, New Jersey. Hi, Anne Marie. How are you?
Hi, Jan. I'm well. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And really, congratulations on your new book.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we want to also mention Autumn House Press and Michael Sims, the editor-in-chief, who, always is supportive of Prosody and brings great authors into Pittsburgh. So we want to thank him.
And makes beautiful books.
That's right. Okay, so you're going to start with something from She Heads Into the Wilderness.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
I'll start with a poem called Ants. An endless trail of leafcutter ants passed before our feet, and our guide, Luis, told me how one had sliced his skin in the cradle between his thumb and second finger, and how long it took to heal. And like the temples and palaces of Tikal, I could imagine being cut into some mosaic of myself, broken by the ants into small bits of green and brown, and carried piecemeal over the grass. My life given over to a love of nothing in particular, a scattering. I don't know how he got onto the subject of the Milky Way, a road in the middle, parting the white silk of space, as if the ants led there, through the trees, down to earth, then back up, all those small green trapezoids of grief filling the void. Or why I thought about kissing, how we could dissolve ourselves, practicing through our mouths for the next life, as the stones on the temple so slowly, thoroughly pressed against each other, as the heat and dampness pressed my eyelids and drummed my chest, so much ruining us as we are meant to be ruined, the frame collapsing, my hand raised toward your face, your eyes closing. I'll read a slightly longer poem called American Tree Sparrow, Platte River, Nebraska. And this is a poem that I wrote after taking a trip with two of my sons. My middle son is a birder, and we went out to Nebraska to see the great migration of the sandhill cranes and snow geese and all kinds of birds that come through there in March. And it also happened that we had a record-breaking snowstorm and got to see a lot of woodland birds that we wouldn't have normally seen. And so this is a poem that comes out of that. I'm not an accomplished birder. I tag along and try to keep up with them. American Tree Sparrow, Platte River, Nebraska. Out here, hunger takes shape as a coyote crossing the white field, or a crane dancing in the frozen corn stubs. There's no end to beaks stabbing ice, yellow legs, snipe, pintails, and hunkered together in the river, cranes by the thousands rising through the snow in one gray wave to forage bony fields. Even memories a kind of hunger, wanting to go back just once, as if this white scrim of a world could be lifted and the past in its fullness would be there behind this ashy afterlife, this snow-blotted landscape where sky and earth weld, no crack between them. When he holds out the bird in his open hand, dead on the roadside, car-swiped, searching for food, I almost believe it could be quickened till he slowly spreads the fan of its wing, and I see how its rufous-capped head is twisted all wrong, how its eyes have no use for light. Who will feast on it when he lays it back on the snowbank? Who will rip its delicate breast? Brief fill for the hungry hole, brief passage through the secret place, brief life, fast death. Out here, the mother of beaks and talons is always eating, and I am like those starving birds flashing their red bellies and yellow chests, flailing as anything approaches, crying, eat me, mother, for I feel useless some days in this life. Hook my throat, wear the silk of my blood on your face, tell me there was a reason more than hunger that drove me here, then leave of me what's left. Scattered on the roadside, for there are so many travelers, and they are forever hungry. I think I'll read a short one, and this is toward the end of the book. It's a poem. It's a very short poem, and if I tell its story, it's going to be longer than the poem. It's called The Bee's Coat, and it's inspired by an artist named Martha Posner. She was talking about her work called The Beast Coat, but I misunderstood her. The bee's coat. Wax and spit and hair, pollen to glow. Make me something to wear with room for wings. I want the splendor coat. Wax, spit, and hair. Gold dust. It's not too late to burrow in the cup, to chew and spin. A simple coat, pollen matted, trailing light. I want to shine in this world. And I'm going to read a poem that I don't usually read, but a lot of people have told me they like it, so I'll read it. It's called Horses. When the horses ran up and over the hill, when they disappeared as though they were entering some world beyond me, separate and separately blessed, in which a mare prophesied and a foal lay quiet in the straw. When one lifted his head into the appled branches and the odor coated his flaring nostrils and filmed his eyes and love made his flanks quiver and he tried but could not shake such love out of his black body. When a horse stood alone in the field, still as a house, looking first down toward the dry grass, then up, stamping her hoof but silent, too proud, knowing her beauty cast her into a world of greed and worshippers in which she would never be known to praise or bow down. When the horses turned and galloped shyly toward the man in the truck, who was the only one who became a horse when he touched their heads, scolded them, who knew their eyes to carry such history, such memory, as could shame us all, which was why they were introverted and sometimes angry, why they shook their heads, and why there was always a zealot among them, backing off, rearing up, fervid for truth.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anne Marie Macari. She's reading from her new book, She Heads Into the Wilderness, by Autumn House Press. I wanted to ask you about the hunger in the book. I love all this hunger, and I feel like there's kind of a hurtling, an intense motion in the poems, a hurtling towards deep emotion, including compassion, including rage, and sort of everything in between. And I'm wondering if you see that same thing, if you feel that same thing in the poems. It's just, I feel this driving, like almost like this runaway train thing. But then we get to this depth.
Well, yes, definitely. I think that's really a wonderful way to put it. And the hunger, it's internal, and then it's the external. It's what you see everywhere in the world that's so makes us feel so unanchored. There's so much desire that we don't know what to do with. And these poems came to me sort of like a train, and I'm usually a fairly slow writer. I used to be. And these came to me very, very quickly, and I wrote the book in about 2 years. And the central section of the book, which is 36, a cycle of 36 sonnets, I wrote in 10 months. And they really... they sort of descended on me or came up out of the earth and grabbed me. I think probably the latter. And so there is that rushing out of emotion and toward something. And definitely, I wouldn't say I was rushing toward emotion, but that I was propelled by a deep, deep emotion in these poems. And also the book came out of a kind of silence that I felt after 9/11. I didn't feel the capacity to write poems. A lot of people did. And there was so much going on. There was that horrible event. There was the war that came so shortly after. There was, you know, intense discussions and finally a realization of global warming. So many things descending on us at once. And I felt very, very hopeless and inarticulate. And then things began to come together for me and the book took shape and I wrote it very quickly.
Well, this idea that this unmoored sense of desire, so much desire around us is really interesting, especially in light of there's this sense of earth in the book too, maybe connected with what you were just talking about, but there's this sense of maybe you can help me with this, of ruin, of sort of returning to the earth but coming from the earth at the same time. But there's definitely a lot of earth that I feel in the book. I don't know if that has to do with what you're talking about with 9/11 and war.
Well, I wanted to write a book for the planet, and it sounds, it could become very corny, and so I obviously didn't want to do that. But my whole history, my whole growing up, my religious education, my formal education taught me that the body is a bad thing and let's get out of it. Let's transcend the body and go someplace better. And my experience as a writer is the opposite, to go into the body, to go into the earth. I have a poem where I say, this is my home. Mm-hmm. I was born here. And that became sort of the central thing for me in this book, the central theme, that I wanted to honor the material world and all that it had in it, which isn't just material. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to write against that Judeo-Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. But, you can want to do something or have an idea to do something. It has to grab you. It has to take hold as poetry. And I think that's why I had a long period where I felt silent before I could begin to write about this.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Okay, could we hear some more poems?
Sure. Why don't I read some from the cycle of sonnets?
Okay.
And the sonnet, it saved me to I sort of stumbled on that form, and it saved me to be able to write in a short form like that because there was so much I wanted to say. And rather than trying to fit it into one poem or two long poems, I could have these shorter poems in which I could go at it in so many different ways. I think I'll read the first one, and it sets the theme, but it's a retelling of Eve's story, and the whole cycle is in a female voice, and I'm working against this idea of dominion from Genesis, where God says, and you will have dominion over everything that creepeth, everything that moves, and the destruction that comes out of that. So this is the first one, and then maybe I'll just read a few of the others. And there's 36, so obviously I can't do justice to the whole cycle. We always ate from that tree. The women with child craved its fruit, sweetest, most red. The way she held it that day and pressed it to her cheek like a pillow and slowly slit it with her teeth and ate it while rubbing her sore back against the tree like a horse. Then many of them rushing her, screaming she was unclean, pushing her into the dirt like a serpent, where she writhed from them, where they taught her right from wrong. And when they were done, they bound and covered her outlaw breasts, her spirit garden below. And they threw the fruit of the tree to the animals and smashed the clay figures. And it went on like that, beyond memory, on and on. If you are an angel, I am the wind. If you are a shepherd, I am a wolf. If you, a bomb, I the emptiness inside. If you are a rope, I'll descend your rough fibers. I'll climb down into my own bones where you are afraid to enter, though they open the book of my body, cranium, breast, the catacombs of lungs, scroll of the tongue, pearl ovaries. You cannot read it. However much you scream, whatever fire, I will be beyond you, and earth is beyond you, and the first and the last beyond you. And beyond you, I know, even beyond you, there is. In the beginning was the animal of space, licking earth to life, the night sky lit with great herds of stars and the paths of planets growing radiant, rubbing each other. Heavens thrust and caress upon us, green and fertile in the cracks, poultice of dust, spore, pollen, and ash. Creation's luminous mouth. In the beginning, all that was made was good because it was made, and what was made and not made knew each other, and it was good. The stars in unending intercourse, heaven an amniosac, the slopping, salty center. From there, all the swimmers breaststroking, diving all night long toward earth. Let me read one. This is a winter one, and it's absolutely freezing here today, so I'm going to read this. What I wake to in the layered winter bed and fall back into in the sling of sleep and walk around all day in and out of, beneath the papery skin around my eyes, another life. Snow, gray and brittle. The sky sagging so low it might be a rag around my head. Thoughts, cold, sharp, dirty ice crackling at the edge of the walk. Unrest inside. The unseen trying to stir the frozen underworld. I don't say it. The white roots inside me winter glazed. I don't say it. And even when everything is at risk, sore with longing, I don't say it. And soon it carves a space inside me with its absence.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anne Marie Macari. She's reading from her new book entitled She Heads Into the Wilderness by Autumn House Press. And I want to mention, again, Autumn House Press with Michael Sims, editor-in-chief, who brings us some great books and great authors into Pittsburgh, and give thanks for that. But I want to ask you about this idea of dominion. You said that in the book you're working against this idea of dominion. Can you talk about the interplay, if there is any, between this idea of dominion and the power of the woman's voice in this book? Or is there a relationship mm-hmm. between that? Because there's definitely a lot of power in this mm-hmm. voice. Mm-hmm. Does this voice have dominion over anything? Or is it a different thing?
Well, I talk to my students a lot about the feminine in exile and what that means. Where is the female in the world? Where does she exist? Because when I look out there, I don't see her. I don't see that energy. I don't feel it. I have to search for it. And we don't even know what it means or how to define it. And so by going back and looking at, you know, our myths, our biblical myths, if you read Genesis, you know, and God says, oh, we're going to punish women by giving them children. Childbirth is a punishment. You know, that was written by a man.
mm-hmm. Surprise.
Yeah. So we have to find what it means to be powerful and not in the way and how to have dominion, first of all, over ourselves, because we haven't had it for so long. But the way that dominion, that statement in the Bible has been used, it's been used as an excuse to exploit everything from our bodies to the earth. And if you start just with the female body and the hatred that's aimed at that, at the female body and female sexuality, then you move outward and say, well, it's the same thing we're doing to the earth. It's the same thing we do to other cultures. It's a very frightening and death wish kind of energy. So yes, I was writing against that, but in a search for my own authentic female strength. What does that even mean? And mm-hmm. and so that's what the search was for in the book. And I think it's always what I've been searching for in all my work, but it comes to a kind of culmination here in this book. I don't know. We'll see where I go from here.
But. Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting question. I don't know where you will go.
Yeah. I who knows?
It's too early for that.
Yeah.
There's this sense of the animal in this book, too, the animal of space, the animal inside us. And then there's all this, there's a lot of, like, there's insects, there's everything is full. Like, there's a contamination or population, depending on how you're looking at it, of the air and the decomposition of everything. It just seems like everything is full and is going back into the earth. Can you talk a little bit about that animal sense that's in the book? It's really compelling, and it's this visceral feeling that's really attracting in the book. Where do you see that in relation to what we've been talking about in the interview?
Well, this I mean, it's not, these are not new ideas, but yet they seem to be still so hard for us to enact in our lives that all the creatures here, and even the non-creatures, even the material of the earth itself, is sacred, and we have no authority over it.
Okay.
And we're related to it.
And we are it.
We are it.
Okay.
And we come from it. There are relatives.
It's nice to have relatives.
We need as many as we can get, especially ones that don't nag you.
That's right. And you don't have to go to on holidays.
Right, right.
Okay, how about more poems?
Okay, sure. Well, why don't I read the last poem from that cycle and then a couple more, is that?
Yeah, we have time for
it. We have time? All right, yeah. Well, maybe I'll read a couple more from the cycle. How's that?
That's good.
I always like to read the Darwin poem because of the great argument in American culture about Darwin, which is utterly unbelievable to me that people still question evolution. And so it just seemed right to bring him in here. And as I read about Darwin, I really fell in love with him for his humanity and the deep, deep struggle he had with himself about exposing what he learned and bringing it to the public. And he finally was able to give up the last vestiges of his religious faith when his favorite daughter Annie died at the age of 10. Darwin came seasick into paradise, packing the ship with crates of fossils, plants, dead birds, anything he could kill or dig up. 5 years collecting, 10 to sift through it all. And in the brain's bright cell, a viscous humming, the terrible doubts. Later, when the favored child died, when she moved through the first wilderness without him, Annie decomposing into chalky layers, no comfort, just hymns of transmutation, songs of barnacles, earthworms, finches, and the lonely tortoise. We are parasites inside parasites, and some have wings. Annie, unsure, as he lurched, seasick, into paradise. And I'll read the last of that cycle, which is the title of the book comes from this. She heads into the wilderness, weeping and stunned by shame, her eyes open, into another country, bent and becoming, fibrous and heavy in her body, feeling that she is the tree, or that she is the fruit that ripens and falls, that falls and will keep falling her whole life, as if all that mattered was plummeting to earth and splitting open. And who hasn't stumbled out of herself into the body of suffering, into bare flesh, stooped shoulders, and the dark hole of the mouth? Threats still ringing, and that taste she never forgot, taste with no end, world with no end. Gates fading, the wind shushing her on. I'm going to read another poem that was inspired by the artist Martha Posner. Torso. And the silver torso where the ghost lives, and the torso of gold and mud. Whatever else, all her days missing, all her work gone, the torso and her upturned collar, a span, a bridge, twisted, and the grass around it, and the torso standing. What makes the spirits come to live here after all we've done to them? What makes the grass and brush try to tangle itself in knots, and the half-body to rise up, to turn toward us as we come into the field?
We have time for one more poem, I think.
Okay. I'll read the last poem in the book, called My Lost Needle. Never had I desire to mend hems or dangling buttons, but tonight, though I can no longer easy aim the frayed end into the eye, though we squint, needle and eye, at each other, and my hand trembles, yet feels true the needle between my fingers, the tether of thread as I pull it through red linen, just the right turn in my wrist, not too fast, thread rubbing the blouse, repeating, mend, mend, my dearest, hold fast, let me patch you, no one will know. You, limp in my hand, draped on my lap, my other body. I, with my warm, fine instrument. You, undone, never whole without me. I would sew till the world around wore patches bright and uneven, sew my childhood back into my bones. I would bind what falls apart. My hand is happy, piercing, rising, circling back, taking me, thou needle, thou red thread, stitch to stitch, my way back, taking there, and I go, what more wanting, what more?
It's the poetry of Anne Marie Macari, and she's reading from her book, She Heads Into the Wilderness, by Autumn House Press. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jan.
It's fun. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.